Every good story needs a bad guy. For every hero, there has to be a villain. And over the history of the Kings' time in Sacramento, there have been a handful of villains to turn the fan base and the city against them at one point or another, whether it's players who have come into Sacramento and dominated the Kings, or even former Kings players and front office members themselves. On today's Locked On Kings podcast, I'm going to be joined by Jason Jones of The Athletic, formerly of the Sacramento Bee, someone who has spent some time being classified as a media villain here in Sacramento, to talk about some of the biggest villains in Kings history.
You are Locked On Kings, your daily Sacramento Kings podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, it is that time. Time for another episode of Locked On Kings.
Hello and welcome into Locked On Kings, your podcast hub for Sacramento Kings coverage all offseason long. Today's episode is brought to you by FanDuel Sportsbook, the official sportsbook of Locked On. Make every moment more. Visit FanDuel.com/LockedOn today to get started. My name is Matt George. I have the privilege of being your host here. I'm a Sacramento sports reporter and producer for ABC 10 News. And as I've shared many times in the past, for those of you who are new, for you to understand, but those who have listened for a while, you know this very well. I grew up a diehard fan of the Sacramento Kings, even though I cover the Kings professionally, and there's a professionalism to that that I have to carry. I am still a fan of the Kings, forever will be a fan of the Kings. It's very much a part of my identity, and that means I grew up hating some of the same people that you might have hated in your Kings fandom history, and there are even some villains that maybe you forgot about. Well, on today's podcast, Jason Jones and I had some fun talking about a couple different villains, different names. There's some obvious ones like Kobe and Shaq, for example, we go into some other specific ones for a little more niche reasons. I don't want to spoil too much of it, but I think you're going to enjoy this conversation. Also, Jason at the beginning talks a little bit about how he has kind of been labeled as a villain in Sacramento despite all the years that he spent covering the Kings because of his LA background and his Laker fandom background. So we have a little bit of fun with that at the beginning. So I think you're going to enjoy this podcast, this conversation. It's a little bit different. It's kind of fun. Definitely an off-season type topic and an off-season type podcast. But what I want from you is please send me or share with me your favorite or most hated Kings villains of your lifetime, because I'm sure there are some names that we have left off. So if there are any villains that you remember that you just either like appreciate now or still to this day hate and can't stand, share those with me. You can on Twitter at Matt George Sack. You can email me mattgeorgesports@gmail.com or leave your thoughts in the YouTube comment section down below. But for now, please enjoy my conversation about Kings villains with Jason Jones. Earlier this week, I had Robert Ori on the Locked On Kings podcast, and it was fun to talk to someone who is largely considered a villain in Sacramento Kings circles because of one shot. And that made me think, you know, let's talk a little bit more about some of the villains of Sacramento Kings history and whether or not that villain title is deserved or not. And to help me discuss some of these is maybe the biggest villain in Sacramento Kings media history, Jason Jones, now with The Athletic, formerly with the Sacramento Bee, coming on wearing an LA hat, just to remind you where he's from. Of course, never shied away from supporting the Los Angeles Lakers while he was here in Sacramento. Jason, villains are something you know well, but you don't necessarily understand when it comes to the Sacramento Kings fan base.
Well, I understand some of them. I don't understand how I always get lumped in as a villain. I mean, that's the funniest thing to me. I'm like, what did I ever do? It's just like, and I know where it all started. It started when I was at the B and I was covering the Raiders. And our editor at the time, Bill Bradley, wanted to do these bios. And it was like a standard bio name, where you went to school, you know, favorite team growing up and your favorite athlete. I felt no reason to lie. Said my favorite team growing up was the Lakers. My favorite player is Magic Johnson. And then like a few months later, they have a bunch of changes. And guess who's now covering the NBA? Me. And that's when I learned that I had like no integrity and I was like a double agent working for the Lakers and I hate Sacramento. And I've had a lot of fun with it, because to me it's hilarious that somehow I became part of the reason why the Kings didn't win. And like, all of a sudden, like, my coverage was too negative. I was like, did you see the teams I covered? What did you want me to say positive? Like, I remember one time I tweeted, they were playing the Lakers, and I tweeted Kobe had 30 points or something. The first reply I got was, there you go, throwing it in our face again. Like, I said, this is an actual stat. This is, not, you know, and I think a lot of fans don't even realize it was a much easier night at work for me when the Kings beat the Lakers. Not the other way around. I wasn't in the locker room like walking in with like a Kobe jersey on, like, yeah, take that, DeMarcus.
I think DeMarcus would have respected that. DeMarcus would have
liked that, Rudy. And then it doesn't help that my fraternity colors are purple and gold. So I had a purple and gold phone case, and Francisco Garcia goes, oh, that a Laker case? I'm like, no, it's my frat colors. He goes, but ain't you a Laker fan though? It's okay, you can admit it. I'm like, God, what is this? I said, all I ever did was be born in LA and be honest.
One of my favorite Jason Jones villain moments that I happened to be somewhat of a part of was when you tweeted about Harry Giles being in foul trouble, and Harry responded to the tweet saying lame tweet. And of course you had fun with that, but with how popular Harry Giles was on social media, so many Kings fans, hey, here comes Jason again, coming after our guy, typical Laker fan. But that Harry Giles moment will forever live fondly in my brain.
Because it became like a 3-4 day thing. And I was like, oh, I said the man had three fouls. Like, it wasn't like I was picking on him. I mean, he had a lot of fouls in a very short time. And then it became... I'm not even thinking this is like a negative, like I'm attacking Harry. None of that's going through my mind. I'm like, I wasn't singling him out. Like, I don't like him. I liked Harry. And then Harry goes at me, and then like Grant Napier joins him going at me. And people are like, it's okay, Harry. Jason's just a hater and a Laker fan. And they're like, why would you tweet that he has three fouls? I'm like, because he's your backup five, and your backup five is in foul trouble. I didn't think it was that big of a deal. And eventually me and Harry made peace. You know, I went down when he was getting his bill. We got pedicures together.
There you go.
Yeah. So we made peace, but it was the weirdest thing. Cause I was like, how did this become about me being a Laker fan? I just said the man had, I said, I have no idea how this went down. Oh, you're a Laker fan. I'm like, believe it or not, I don't wake up eating, drinking, and breathing the Lakers. I really don't. But it's just funny how it becomes like, yep, there you go again. I'm like, okay, I guess. I mean, for the most part, I think most fans have fun with it. Mm-hmm. Very rarely did someone try to get personal. And that's why I learned how to use the mute function on Twitter. But, you know, but I mean... I think most people get the joke at this point. I know even now, like, you know, former Kings trainer Pete Youngman tweets up, goes, there you go again, being biased. It's like, I'm like, LeBron James comes the all-time leading scorer. There you go again, Jason. You're showing off your bias. I'm like, yep, you know me. And I haven't covered the team for what, at least two full seasons now? And I still get that, which is hilarious. And what was the one thing this past season? Someone said it must be eating me alive that the Kings had a better record than the Lakers. I was like, actually not. I'm like, I actually, you know, as long as I was around the Kings, people forget, actually, the time I was covering the team, it was kind of a transition in the media world. The Twitter thing was becoming much bigger. The relationship between local reporters and the teams were changing because more players and teams were going to the national guys. I was in a very weird space, and I was the only person traveling with them. The only one. So I'm by myself 100-something nights a year watching them get beat by 30 and 40 sometimes. And because I was there the whole way, I kind of developed a real bond with the whole team, with the players, the coaches, the execs, like, whenever Vlade sees me, he gives me a big old hug. You know, when I see Pete D'Alessandro, we're cool. You know, it, you know, it's just the bond we ended up developing, because it was like, we know what? We might suck, you know, but we know Jason's going to be here. Because as the season would go on, even at home games, you get less and less media. They always knew I was going to be there, you know. And so it really – so I ended up leaving there, you know. I wouldn't say I left completely. I mean, I'm still around. You know, I don't really go to games. I still talk to people, you know, and it became a thing where I got a lot of friends with the Kings. And I have no problem saying that. I don't have any hate. I was legitimately happy for the season they had because, my God, if you worked for the Kings – the last 15, 20 years, you've seen some stuff that's just, oh, God. I mean, there's times where I run into like a Darren Collison or guys like that, and oh, even Michael Malone, and we'll be like, man, some of the stuff we saw, just, you had to be there. And I was there for most of it, and crazy thing was, a lot of it I couldn't write because it was like, well, if you write, you know, this was off the record, but they would just tell me stuff. And I think I can write a book one day off all the stuff. You know, the little quarrels and squabbles during shoot around that I would catch because I'd be the only one there. And it was kind of an old school thing where the coaches would let you watch with the understanding that you there's some things they were just amongst the team and you just didn't expose them unnecessarily. Like, so if a guy's yelling at a guy, I don't go and tweet, there's dissension, they yell. No, guys yell. So I saw a lot of that. I had a lot of fun with it. But yeah, either way, no matter what I say, I clearly hate the Sacramento Kings.
Well, all you have to do when you write that book, make sure you title it Lame Tweet for me, and I'll be the first one to buy it.
Yeah, Lame Tweet, Life with the Kings. For, you know, people forget. I tell people all the time, I got on that beat when I was, what, 30? I gave a quarter of my life to watching Sacramento Kings basketball. Over a quarter of my life was dedicated to watching a team win 25 to 30 games and trying to figure out what can I say about this, you know, like this is my first time ever even just kind of casually following the Kings, not watching the NCAA tournament, going, who are they going to draft? So hey, you know, it is what it is. You know, by the way, shout out to Maya McNair, a good Dodger fan who was running the Kings. Yeah. L.A., no matter what you do, Sacramento, you can't escape L.A.
Here he goes. He's planting those seeds. He's always for those biases.
Monty McNair is about to trade De'Aaron Fox to the Lakers for, like, a second-round pick in, like, cap space.
Just for, remember.
Like, for a sign and trade for D'Angelo Russell. You know me. I'm working the phones with Monty.
Every time you see a Robert Horry Big Shot Bob game 4 tweet on social media too, it's probably Jason Jones that posted it responding to somebody. Today's episode of the Locked On Kings podcast is brought to you by FanDuel. Make a fast break to FanDuel now for the NBA finals, because new customers can get a no sweat first bet up to $2,500. That's $2,500 back in bonus bets if your first bet doesn't win. Look, it's like an insurance policy for you, right? FanDuel doesn't just want you to show up, deposit however much money you're comfortable depositing, blow it all on one or two bets at the very beginning, and then leave and never come back and feel like you've been robbed and gypped and just paid to be gut punched. FanDuel doesn't want that. They want you to have fun. They want you to enjoy yourselves and adding that extra kind of financial addition or incentive into watching and following these sporting events and these games that you love. So these no sweat first bets, basically you're either going to win that first bet and you're already in the green, you've already made money, or you're going to get bonus bets back to help you get back into the green and maybe put you in a better position than when you even started if you lose that first bet. There's no better place to bet on all the playoff action than America's number one sports book. Visit FanDuel.com/lockedon and get a no sweat first bet up to $2,500. That's FanDuel.com/lockedon. FanDuel, the official sports betting partner of the NBA. Like, to me, growing up, my biggest villain of all time, not just sports, like when I think villain, it's Kobe Bryant. Now, there's a respect factor to that. There's an appreciation for how great Kobe was. But you watching him as much as you did and watching him fight the Kings and play the Kings as much as he did, what was it about Kobe, especially games in Sacramento when he'd have big shots or big moments, his interactions with players, his interactions even with the crowd at times? What made Kobe such a hated villain during that time, other than just being impossible to beat?
Remember, he was so young. Remember, he was like 20 in 2000 or 21. That first run, he was young, and he just oozed like confidence, arrogance that you couldn't, if he wasn't on your team, you're like, oh. And then he just had the knack for like, okay, I'm gonna go ahead and take your heart out now. What was that, you know, that one, remember, what did he have, like 40 and 16 or something ridiculous against, you know, it's just something, you know, and he would do it, and you'd be like, oh, I mean, if you're not a Laker fan, you go, oh, I can't believe this guy. And it was crazy. You look at that time, he was probably the nicest of them. You think about it, Shaq and Phil Jackson were outright antagonists. I mean, you know, what does Phil say? The fans were semi-civilized. I mean, Shaq said the stuff he said. I mean, he's apologized for calling them the queen, you know, queens. But, you know, I mean, those guys were antagonists. And then you had this little young guy who didn't talk the same way, but was just as arrogant as the rest of them. Mm-hmm. And he's a Laker. And you knew he was going to be really, really good. And you're like, we got to deal with this guy for another 15 years. So, yeah, I mean, it's just – and then even after those title runs and he comes back, he was on another run with Pau Gasol. They had that one game down in L.A. where – was it the one where – who did he kind of shove? Was it Francisco Garcia? I forgot who it was he got away from and hit the game winner. Ime Udoka missed the free throws. Mm-hmm. And then he kept, like, hit the game winner. And Paul Westphal was just livid. And then I also contribute to it because I would say things like the Kings are not the Lakers' rival. And the fans would get mad at me. And I'd be like, well, and then Paul Westphal said it. Like, we're not rivals. They're the Lakers, and we're just trying to get respect. And I'm like, see, Paul said it, not me. So, I mean, yeah, but yeah, Kobe just, he's a guy where I even said while he was playing, you're going to miss him when he's gone. And I didn't mean that. Obviously, what's happened since then, but I just meant on the court. Hmm. You'll appreciate his game a lot more. I think it was just so cool at the end of his career, that last game in Sacramento, to see the reception. It was like, hold up. They're like giving Kobe an ovation. I'm like, yeah. So you knew the respect was always there. Whenever you have a great rivalry going back and forth, you can't have a rivalry if there's no respect. Mm. You know, the hatred is bred from the fact that that team can beat you. So, I mean, that's what Kobe brought. And like I said, Shaq and Phil were just antagonists. They just were like, you know, like little grade school kids sometimes just teasing them. And didn't think Shaq mooned the fans and they left after game 7 in 2002. So, yeah, fun times.
I think I associate my, like, childhood hatred of Kobe Bryant to one moment in particular, because I had such a love for Mike Bibby growing up. Like, I buzzed my head, always wore headbands, wore number 2. Like, I adored Mike Bibby growing up. He was my favorite player. He was my hero. So, to when Kobe elbowed Bibby in game 6, or was that game 6? Yeah, in game 6, I think – that's the moment that I always associate the villain of Kobe Bryant with. But you're right, it was Shaq that was in particular being the one doing the talking. Now, your profile picture on Twitter is you with Shaq. Now, to be fair, Shaq's wearing a Kings hat because this is when Shaq became a minority owner of the Sacramento mm-hmm. Kings. So kind of a little bit different circumstances there. But maybe I'll get in trouble for this. Like, now that it's later and I can separate the feelings of being in the playoffs versus now and who Shaq is now, especially the things that he and Chuck say on TNT all the time, I have no problem with Shaq saying Queens. Like, it was a rivalry. It was a shot. It's fun. It really didn't mean much. He had to apologize for it, I guess. People made a big deal out of it. Do you think Shaq should have apologized for the Queens comment? Because even if he was a massive villain at the time, like, I kind of dig it. Like, I liked it. I thought it added fun fuel to the fire.
I just think we're living in a different world now. And as we evolved as a society, it goes from like a joke to, you know, a bigger thing of in terms of, are you, you know, masculinity mm-hmm. and are you, it just became too much mm-hmm. for some people. I mean, and it was 20 plus years ago. What, you know, even with, you even mentioned, I think, with Kobe, with Bibby. Kobe was coming out of an era where guys did stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't personal. It was like, yeah, I'm gonna throw you. And you hear some of the stories about Kobe now. Kobe was rough out there, but he welcomed it back. He still was probably, you know, he probably wasn't as bad as John Stockton from what people tell me back in the day. But you know, that's just kind of the way things were. And a lot of things that you could say and do back then, you can't do now. Like imagine the whole Rick Fox, Doug Christie thing. That'd be like 15, because if I remember correctly, that was before the Malice in the Palace.
Mm.
If that happened, say, now, oh, Doug's getting like 15 games or something, you know. It was just a different era. And I just think it's almost harder to build rivalries the same way, just because, you know, back in the day, the Sixers and the Celtics like fought all the time.
Mm.
I mean, you got videos of Kareem dropping his hands and swinging on people. You know, you're not going to have that anymore. And now it's more just, but now all the guys are buddies, you know, even after the Kings like lost to the Warriors, you know, Draymond and De'Aaron have the same eight, you know, it's like all love, you know, it's a different vibe. But I think now you talk about villains and everything, it's not even on court stuff anymore. It's like, I remember Kings fans hated Darren Revell from the Business Reporter for basically saying there's no fans at the game, no wonder they're moving. You know, I think Spencer Halls will be forever hated in Sacramento.
Yes.
Even though I personally like Spencer. Me and Spencer always got along fine, you know, but there really isn't a King that I didn't like. So there's that too. But you know, I think Spencer will never get any love in Sacramento. He can't go over by Doco and get a free drink. Jason Terry, even though to me the Jason Terry one is the weird one, because what Jason Terry did was what any other vet would have done. Like, hey, I got traded there. I don't want to go. I want to go to a contender. And that happens all the time, but fans took it personally, like, how dare he not want to be a King? Duh, why would he want to be a King? If he's got a chance to go play on a contender, why wouldn't he want to do that? And it was just fun. They were just like, oh, we hate him. I'm like, trust me, there's guys on this team who don't want to be here. So, you know, I understood the hate for Spencer, because, you know, you would think that Spencer would at least have the wherewithal to say, I played there. Let me at least not rub it in their faces that they might be going to Seattle, my hometown. But Spencer was like, oh, shoot, man, I love Seattle. I can't wait for this. Yeah, I had never seen a player. I think of all the games I covered, Spencer got booed worse than any Laker ever did.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they couldn't even get his name out right in intros. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was next level hate, and I understood that completely. That was a real sensitive time in Sacramento. And I think we all understood that, but, you know, Spencer being Spencer, he didn't care. He's just like, hey, you know, and I understood his sentiment. He grew up a Sonics fan. And in his mind, he's probably thinking, I could have a chance to go back home and play for the Sonics, you know, go from my hometown. I understood his sentiment, but it wasn't the best time to do that. It just really wasn't.
Yeah. Like,
to this day, I can't imagine Spencer coming down. I don't think he'll be sitting by Brad Miller getting a standing ovation anytime soon.
Probably not. You mentioned Draymond Green earlier. Like, Draymond, I think, established himself as a villain, especially with the incident and the clash that he had with Domantas Sabonis in the playoffs. I like Draymond Green, the villain, the guy who talks, that has his own podcast. Like, I think villains are great for the league personally. Like, when LeBron James became the biggest villain on the planet when he went to Miami. Like, I think it's great for the league. It's great for storylines and things like that. I think it goes a little too far when you're stomping on a guy's chest or grabbing ankles or whatever happened in the playoffs. But afterwards, you mentioned, like, these guys are all friends, or guys always dap each other up after. Draymond, I guess, did not get any kind of dap or anything, handshake from Domantas Sabonis afterwards, and took to his podcast to express frustration about it, and to say that he lost respect for him in that sense. What do you think about that situation? Because to me, like, that's where I was like, okay, I got a little fed up with Draymond at that point. Like, the guy who is the instigator during the series is upset that you didn't shake his hand after the series, after you lost. Like, are you really the guy that's supposed to be talking about this after a series is over? But I'm curious your opinion on Draymond's comments of not getting a handshake or a dap from Domas after the series was over.
It kind of caught me off guard a little bit. You know, Draymond's a content creator now, you know, and so he's going to say what's on his mind. And I mean, I kind of got what he was coming from. He's kind of like saying, hey, in Draymond's mind, it wasn't personal. You know, I think one thing I like about Draymond is that he can do all that stuff and like, and then be cool. Once the game's over, he's like, all right, cool, it's over. Like, people forget. Remember when his little shot to the groin of LeBron cost him a game in 2016 and, you know, you could argue cost him a championship, even though I still say you have game seven at home. I don't want to hear about that game, but but he, like, LeBron's at his wedding and they're like best buddies. So, I mean, I think in Draymond's mind, like, yeah, that happened game two. Why are you mad game seven? Like, why are you still mad? Like, it's over. But no big deal. I mean, I like a little chippiness. I like, you know, guys kind of, you know, like, that's how you get a rivalry. I can, you know, I know they're not going to, I mean, it wasn't like Draymond was popular anyway in Sacramento, but yeah, it's going to get, even if, say, Draymond's on another team, Draymond's going to get booed loudly and very clearly when he's back in Sacramento. And I think that's good. Let's get a little animosity, you know, on the court and see that thing play out. I like it, you know. You know, all we need is DeMontis to get a podcast and talk, you know, and have on, like, Steven Adams and all these other guys that have run-ins with Draymond. But it's crazy, too, though, because once you're around Draymond, you can't help but to like him. Mm. Like, I've been around him. I did a story last year. I went down to L.A. and hung out with him a little bit. It's hard not to like him, you know? And so I've always said I like Draymond as a player because I respect the guy who can dominate a game without scoring. And when he's at his best, he can control the entire game and not score. And like I said, he's honest. And that's another thing, too, I think people aren't used to. We've got to a point where we're used to athletes lying to us and we're cool with it. Like, I don't even watch press conferences happen. I'm like, I don't want to hear this. I know it's not what he really believes. Mm-hmm. And that's why someone told me many years ago, don't write what we say, write what you see. Because, you know, they'll try to, and then they'll try to get you to say, well, you don't understand the game. Pride is kept. A lot of athletes who play the game don't understand the game because I've talked to them and their coaches told me that guy don't know what the hell he's doing. I can't get him to understand basic concepts. He's mad at you because you called him out on something. So yeah, it's a crazy world we live in, but you know, I would love to see Draymond on the Kings just for, you know, for like WWE-esque, like, this drama, you know, then they get a little Kings.com podcast where Draymond and Domas just hang out, like they go to lunch every once a week and talk.
I'm thinking of like Daniel Bryan and Kane, Team Hell No, like in therapy together until they hug it out.
That would be fun. Yeah, I mean, stranger things have happened. So, I mean, I think, you know, with Draymond, you just kind of have to kind of ride it out and say, you know what? Draymond's going to say some stuff. We're going to think it's crazy. We're going to move on with our lives and it's all going to be gravy.
Finally, Jason. Off the court villains, who are, I mean, I think the answer to this might be fairly obvious, but I still think it's a fun question. Who's the bigger off the court villain in Kings history, the Maloofs or Pete D'Alessandro?
Oh, it's the Maloofs. Easy.
But Pete got some heat, man. Pete got some heat very quickly, especially with what happened with Mike Malone. But the Maloofs did try and get the team out.
Yeah. I mean, end of the day, there's no Pete if the Kings don't stay. And I think as we look back, I don't know if we can say history is kinder to Pete, but I think a lot of us didn't. I knew to a degree, but I think a lot of us didn't realize what Pete was dealing with upstairs. And I think in a lot of ways, in some ways, history is a little bit kinder to Pete. You know, did you know? I don't think Pete said, "Hey Vivek, let's go ahead and put our draft on Grantland so we can all be a joke for years." I mean, you know, I mean, I think in some, did Pete deserve some criticism? Yeah. And then me and Pete also had like a come to Jesus discussion at one point, because me and Pete had heat for a minute. He had like some things I wrote and we're going back and forth via, yeah, it was, I, you know, but me and, you know, Pete, me and Pete are good. And I just think you look back now and you think about not just Malone, but you know, all the coaches, the way the front office was handled and everything else, you realize that Pete was not your biggest problem. You know, so I think it's, you know, I can't even, it's hard for me to even say Pete's really a villain. Pete in some ways was a victim of, not that he was perfect, but he was also a victim of circumstance. You know, if Vivek said, I want a new coach, he had to go get a new coach. Even if it made no sense to anyone, and I've talked to multiple people who were involved in that, who told Vivek, do not fire Malone. He was told by more than one person, don't do this. And it still happened. Now look at my buddy, Michael Malone, the only coach I ever covered who would always throw hip hop lyrics into his press conferences so that I felt good about that. I'd wear like a Wu-Tang shirt. He dropped Protect Your Neck. You know, you gotta protect your neck against those guys, you know? So yeah, it's easily the Malouse. And I'll even say with the Malouse, their biggest crime was going broke.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they were just trying to save themselves financially. Yeah, it sucked, but that was one part where I think for me, the way the Sacramento Bee covered that, they never wanted me to actually cover the relocation stuff. They told me the stuff that was happening on the court. I hated that because people thought I was an idiot. They were like, you don't even know what's going on. I'm like, I actually do, but they don't want me to write about it. They had a whole dedicated team that they were like, you focus on the court. And I thought that was also kind of good, too, because I wasn't from Sacramento. I didn't have the emotional attachment. I could kind of sit back and say, you know what? This is kind of foul, but hell, this is business. And maybe they didn't handle it well. I think the point someone made to me was they sold the family brewery, and it's like, people are always going to drink. You keep the brewery. You know, they may have made some mistakes. I know they're trying to, you know, I guess they're doing well in Vegas. I haven't seen those guys in a while, but, you know, I hear they're doing okay.
I know with me, like, the Malouf name will always spark a negative reaction for them almost taking the team out of Sacramento. Mm-hmm. But I can't hate Joe and Gavin specifically. Like, I never had any interactions with George, but Joe and Gavin, my memories of Joe and Gavin are fist pumping and jumping up and down courtside during the heyday. So I am able to separate at least with Joe and Gavin any kind of hatred with that. But I know, I mean, it doesn't matter. You have the Malouf name, and to some in Sacramento, you are a villain forever because of the Seattle near move.
Yeah, and I think there's probably, you know, yeah, so I completely get that, you know. I mean, I'm not going to dispute that, you know, but like I said, it's also weird for me because I know all the people involved.
Mm.
So it's like, I do have like it allows me to kind of humanize them and understand that I don't think Joe or Gavin had a negative thing in them about Sacramento. To them, it was business, you know, and hey, business happens. And I think, you know, they'll still go down as the greatest villains, but I'll say this about them before we go. They also gave Sacramento some of the best times they've had. So I get you hate what happened, but never forget that the reason why the playoff drought hurts so much is because you remember the good times they gave you. And I even said back in 2000, I told everyone I knew in Sacramento, I said, you know what? This is going to ruin you. They're like, what do you mean? I said, now you've experienced this. Now it's going to be hard for you to accept we're just the lovable losers who just want to be an 8 seed. It's not going to feel the same. And that was part of the frustration because you got within a game, overtime of a game 7 of the NBA Finals, you probably would have won. And you can't, and then Weber gets hurt. And people don't realize Weber was my favorite player when I was in middle school and college, you know. And so, I mean, he was in college. So, yeah, this is a whole lot of ties that bring this thing together, but maybe Ori is the biggest villain. Maybe Ori. Maybe Samaki Walker for hitting that three that shouldn't count.
Samaki Walker.
Maybe it's Samaki Walker because then without that three, maybe they still win that game. And, you know, we're talking about the 21-year anniversary of the Kings NBA championship. So, yeah, don't be mad at Rob. Be mad at Samaki Walker.
Real quick, if you think Joe and Gavin were to be invited or to show up at a Kings game at the Golden One Center, do you think they'd be booed? I feel like they'd be welcome back.
Now that the team is doing better, yeah, I think it's different.
Yeah.
I think they would at least get like a, you know, you have your boos probably still there, but I think if the team's doing well, say it's a playoff game and they're there courtside waving a towel, like, yeah, and all that, it'd be kind of hard to boo them at this point. I think I personally believe those guys love Sacramento. I don't doubt that about them at all. I think they love Sacramento. I think they had some financial hardships that forced them to consider some different things. And at the end of the day, when push came to shove and David Stern made it clear what he wanted, they went ahead and sold to the group the NBA wanted them to sell to. They didn't fight it. They just wanted their money. And I don't think they hated Sacramento. So yeah, I think we're getting close to, you know, it's been what, 10, how many years since Vex had the team? 10 plus years now?
Something like that, yeah.
Hey, go ahead, Matt. Start the campaign. Let's bring the Maloofs back for one night.
I don't know if I'm the right guy to do that, but I would be happy to see him personally.
let's bring Joe and Gavin back for one night. Maybe we even get Jeff Petrie to come out of seclusion and say hi to us.
Here we forgive.
Yeah. Cool. Let's do it. You know, light the forgiveness beam.
There it is. Jason, I appreciate you so much, my friend. Thank you so much for coming on here. Always appreciate the work that you're doing over at The Athletic. It's good to see you at Kings games every now and then. Hope to see you more in the future, bud. Thank you.
No problem. I'm probably going to pop up at the Classic. I got to go see Wimby.
Let's go. We'll see you there. I enjoyed that conversation with Jason. Had a lot of fun with that. Hope you did as well. Remember to send me your favorite or most hated Kings villains, or maybe we already talked about one or two of them, Spencer Hawes, Jason Terry, whoever it may be. Like, get loose in the comment section. Send me some emails. Send me some tweets as to why these guys boiled your blood so much over the course of your time as a Kings fan. And remember, or actually, let me know too, like that question that I asked at the end. I feel like Gavin and Joe Maloof would be welcomed back fine now. Like, I would have no issue seeing them, even though the Maloofs did try and move the Sacramento Kings to Seattle or out of Sacramento. Am I alone on that? Do you agree? Do you feel the same way? Let me know. Let's talk about it as we can keep these off-season conversations going. And tomorrow on the Locked On Kings podcast, we'll get back into draft conversation and draft coverage. I just thought we'd take a little bit of a break from that today for this fun, kind of different villain conversation. So I hope you enjoyed it. Hope you will continue to join me on future episodes of the Locked On Kings podcast all off season long. Appreciate your support as always. Until next time, my name is Matt George. You've been listening to Locked On Kings, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.